Special Agent Byron Frost. Byron.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate Darren Popke's generous invitation and the Packers organization and the Mentor Protege program, which has the greatest of aspirations, and as I've met some of the greatest people involved in it. So, and plus, being invited here allowed me the very first time I got to go to Lambeau Field, which is a big deal. So any of you remember your first time, I'm just going through that right now. So I especially want to talk to you here, and I'm glad to be here. It's because the people in this audience, those who are hoping to gestate a new business, already have one, you are all at the focus of a economic war on our way of life. You see, we as Americans can appreciate a war where there's blood spilled. We are so difficult for us to appreciate where virtual blood is on the ground. And Wisconsin has that. You see, it's like sharks in the water. Wisconsin has some of the greatest and most wonderful organizations and up-and-coming businesses in the world. We are the gestating place for almost all the manufacturing you could imagine. We have great firms from anyone from Rock Automation, SC Johnson, Johns Controls, the Cray Supercomputer is built here, Oshkosh Corp makes the new version for the MRAP, Merrin Marine makes a littoral combat ship, we have Epic Systems, every time you go to a doctor, you have Wisconsin software on things. All these things are Wisconsin-based, made by Badger hands. And just like blood in the water, the ideas that Wisconsin Badgers are creating is drawing the sharks. And they're trying to steal your ideas and take the money you're making and the ideas you have and bring them to their own country to benefit themselves so that their way of life improves and ours goes down. And it's the people in this audience, in the business world, that are on the front lines in this virtual world. This virtual world where the cost is actually our way of life. So it's not me. I'm not on the front line. I'm in the, back room watching TV, waiting for you to call. And I'm hoping you do. Because you are in the bunkers, the trenches of this virtual war, protecting America's livelihood, intellectual property. Under federal law, a trade secret, which is the little kernel they're trying to steal, is anything that you have in your businesses that derives independent value by not being known to the public or your competitors. So you put it on a website, and they need a trade secret. But there are things out there. We're not talking about patents, which patents, everyone knows about what they are after 18 months. We're talking about that way you do business, you ain't telling nobody. It could be the inseam of a weld on a Briggs & Stratton engine. It could be your customer lists. It could be your supply chain information. How you lay out your shop floor. That may be a comparative advantage. You have the painting process on the shop floor right there instead of another building. And a delegation comes in and goes, that's how they do it. So we have to consider these things, what we're giving away and how other nations are stealing it. But at the end of the day, it's only through effective partnerships between business folks, academia, which has all the ideas where it starts out with. My alma mater, UW-Madison, Marquette University, St. Norbert, they are developing those ideas and they move on to their corporations. And foreign nations are stealing them right from the colleges. So we have to cooperate with academia, with students, with professors, with business owners, with state and local governments. And we have a very effective outreach here with the state of Wisconsin and their Homeland Security headed by General Dunbar. So only through partnerships can this work. Now, if I didn't talk about exactly how this is, how this intellectual property theft, why we should care, consider this. This is what we're, I have my laptop in front of this, huh? Something's in front. There we go. We estimate in the FBI that we may be hemorrhaging about $400 billion to other countries for IP theft this year. How many aircraft carriers could we build with that? How many college educations of our up-and-comers could we pay for? How many full health care could we pay for? How many highway projects? My alma mater was faced with a $250 million shortfall. Imagine how easily that would be taken care of with that. So this is stuff that we have to take measures to protect. And under federal law, that trade secret, if you do not take what's called by Congress reasonable measures, we, the FBI, can't open a case. And reasonable measures are just that. They're not perfect. Congress didn't say perfect, but it's making people sign confidentiality agreements, non-disclosure agreements, locking your doors, using firewalls, using cameras. All these things equal reasonable measures, and nothing is insignificant. And the last thing you can do, though, and speaking of insignificant, is when people are protecting their ideas, I find too often, I go to a person that sets up shop in a closed-down strip mall that used to have a Kohl's. You remember the Kohl's? You had the food store and another one. They're set up there, one person, and already they're being targeted maybe by the Chinese. Why? They have an idea, and they have a website, and somebody's looking. So the biggest mistake you can have is I ain't important enough, because you are somebody somewhere, and somebody wants what you got. Be egotistical. And even more, the real cost is in jobs. Now, this isn't all just because of intellectual property theft through cyber hacking and stuff, but a nonpartisan group, it's quoted by Fortune magazine, said that through intellectual property theft, we may be losing over 1 million jobs a year. And the Center for Strategic International Studies, along with McAfee, the antivirus provider, actually did a study, first time ever, on how much they think cyber attacks cost us. On the low end, they say we lose $100 billion to hacking. Maybe 500,000 jobs, high-skilled trained jobs, families worrying about how to put their kids through school, all because someone didn't take one of these reasonable measures. So it's important. And the hack is, at some statistics think that hacking may cost us $300 billion a year. Who's targeting our stuff? Well, no nation has friends, only interests. As Charles de Gaulle, the War II French leader, says. I believe that axiom is very accurate. It's like business is war, the Japanese axiom. The two largest purveyors of stealing our intellectual property, according to the FBI and a report we have to give Congress, is China and Russia. But they ain't equal. No. If we went by scale, the Chinese flag would be at least 90% of that page. That's right. When we do economic espionage cases, the ones you know about or don't know about, up to 90% of the cases we run usually have some People's Republic of China connection. Does that mean that we should ignore other hostile foreign nations like Illinois? No. You got to worry about them too, and Russia too. And you have to, how are they doing that and who's doing it? Well, it's as simple as outsiders and insiders. And unfortunately for all of us, they don't look like that. They don't got the ninja costume. They're not simultaneously accessing a laptop while stealing the paper files. I'll let you in a secret that my favorite movie of all time is The Princess Bride. I just love that movie. Everything is quotable, and everybody can watch it. There's no, like, parental discretion is advised. It's great. So the fact is, in that movie, there was a mythical poison you all probably know called iocane powder. Odorless and tasteless, among the world's most deadly poisons. Paper is like that. Until recently, paper was the number one medium of intellectual property theft in the United States. Why? Well, it's odorless and tasteless. And when someone leaves and they take this stuff with them, who knows? There's no record. See, you can track a download through the right stuff, email. Just can't track the paper. I don't know what you printed out yesterday, much less 5 years ago. It got squirreled away in your pot. So that's something we have to worry about too. So let's talk about one of these, insiders. Insiders, they are already part of your organization. And for whatever reason, you have to remember they are people. Some motivation, whether through greed or revenge or a combination of many, has motivated them to want to take your ideas. Now, there are different types of insiders, and the most comprehensive study on insider threats has been done through a group through Carnegie Mellon University. It's called the CERT, Insider Threat Division. They've done voluminous stuff. You can just download the reports, like the 19 common sense ways to mitigate insider threats. It's all free and available on the internet. They have four different types. First one is a fraudster. The fraudster is a la the movie Office Space, where you decide to discreetly send one-eighth of a dollar, a little extra, to an account, pretty soon you've got millions of dollars. So I can do that. Fraud. Another one is it's theft of intellectual property. This can bankrupt economies, countries, and livelihoods. Espionage, stealing of classified defense information. And sabotage. Sabotage is very real. Right, one in the right place at the right time can cause mayhem. Think about this guy at O'Hare International Airport. Had a bad day. So what does he do? Cuts some wires, starts a fire. Whole nation, whole world's air network. Out of whack. Guy, I believe it was, you got Sally and Fannie Mae. One of the two. IT professional, also, was exhibiting what we call indicators of insider threats. See, there's things you can look for. This person had job performance issues, other stuff, and he apparently was working on what's called a logic bomb. There's no common sense to be made. It's basically a hand grenade for your computer network. Destructive. It's like sitting in your backyard going, "Hey, Bob, what are you working on?" "Oh, a rocket launcher." "What's it for?" "Hunting." Yeah, you don't believe that either. Same thing with a logic bomb. So this guy knew, he maybe must have known he was on the way out. So on a November day, he's told, "Hey, you gotta take a hike, clean out your desk." There's a reason why people get walked out. This guy, 2 hours later, still putting his pot plants away. Boop. Screw these people. He puts on a logic bomb on the network. If an astute IT professional had not seen the code, most of the servers of a nationwide financial organization would have gone down, causing mayhem. So that's another example, the saboteur. So, but in the basic sense, an insider is anybody who has, by virtue of their position, they're either an employee, ex-employee, or they're a subcontractor, contractor, who has gained access to your ideas or your business and has abused it in some way. In Wisconsin, all federal prosecutions under that act that I just talked to you about, it's called the Economic Espionage Act, have involved insiders. And there's been three in the last 3 years. The very first of them was at the Medical College of Wisconsin. And all three involved people from China. Don't want to beat up on them, but it's 100% here. Gentleman, an academic at the Medical College, was seen on footage going into his professor's office. He leaves. Actual vials of C-25, cancer-fighting drug, are gone. He suspected. He apparently mailed something. We don't know what it is back home. And on a website, they do some looking, and he's claiming he developed it, and he's apparently bringing it back to a Chinese institution. They decide he's a threat, kick him out. Well, his access wasn't cut. Once again, there's always a cyber connection. This pissed-off person goes home, logs on, and starts deleting raw data off the medical college servers. That is what he was convicted for. Then we have this. This just recently concluded. A gentleman, called by many the father of MRI, brilliant guy, working for the about $18 billion component of GE in Waukesha, Wisconsin, decides to download 2.4 million files, put them on personally owned media. That bring your own device stuff, that's killing us. The moment you allow somebody to have their own stuff in there, you don't control where that data is. Puts it on that, brings it home, source code, evaluations of competitors, then puts it on 4 1-terabyte hard drives, and mails it, and sends it physically back to China. According to their filings, possible irreparable injury to GE Healthcare. And then there's this ongoing case.
I felt betrayed.
Daniel McGann says his company, American Superconductor, was the victim of economic espionage right out of a Cold War spy novel. The blatant theft of advanced computer software that he was selling to a Chinese energy firm.
They were out to kill my company. Cynobel powers the world.
Federal prosecutors charged that Cynobel, a wind energy company with close ties to the Chinese government, lured one of McGann's employees, Dijon Karabasovic, to steal software, offering him a $1.7 million contract. Prosecutors call it attempted corporate homicide and filed criminal charges against Sinovel and two top executives for trade theft.
This is charged in Madison.
McGann says the alleged theft cost his company more than $1 billion in market value.
You had to lay off a lot of workers.
Yeah, we laid off about 500 people.
Does that sound bad? That's an ongoing case. Until proven guilty, innocent. But the fact is that the allegations are that not even American-based individual accessed at supposedly this Chinese company's behalf, the behalf of two people that we've charged from China executives with trying to take software that was developed by Badger Hands in Middleton, Wisconsin. So these are very real costs. The question is, how do we mitigate it as business owners? The insider threat is very complicated. I got a more verbose, probably to many boring, longer thing where I deal with the insider threat. But it essentially involves two things. First thing is the insider threat team, building a team, and instituting an insider threat program, knowing what to look for, putting the right IT software safeguards in. First, a team.
Part of a team.
Don't worry, no baseball bat. I had to take it out.
It's about a one big team. I get nowhere unless the team wins.
So you can decide what your team is, but essentially you need a couple things. First, no insider threat mechanism ever works without buy-in by executive management. So if you're the M, executive management, you're right there. But the worker bees in a large organization have to feel empowered that they can do this stuff. These things break and have to be dealt with the same day. I've been called where people said, hey, this guy came in over Christmas, he took everything, downloaded everything, and he's leaving today. He's going to be here in 3 hours to check out. Do you want to be there for the interview? Don't have much time. That's why we have to have this rapport with business, because they knew to call, and we came out in a clown car full of agents shooting everywhere. So, no shooting anymore. But, and then the most important facet of this is HR. People say it's security, IT. No, it's actually HR. HR knows the imprint of everybody's badness. You got problems with drinking, financial stuff, you've been run up with altercations with the people, they see it. And they have to be involved. And that's why you need the legal counsel. I'm a lawyer by training, but they're the stick in the mud. You have to make sure that they're on the team, and they've already told HR, hey, this privacy thing, it's okay outside the organization not to say anything, but inside, you might want to say this person's got a threatening kind of this stuff going on to security. So they need to be on the team. You have to have corporate security internal audit, who actually, in many organizations, make sure people sign off on all this stuff. And you have to make sure that is annual. Not just the first time when someone fills out a million forms and doesn't know what they're signing. You have to make sure that they spend time on this. And if it's someone from a lot of countries, they have a very different idea about what protection of intellectual property is. And I've seen people get run amok in these investigations through no apparent fault of their own. If you have an expert from a foreign nation, make sure they understand what they're signing. Because you're going to make assumptions, and you shouldn't. It's a lack of training. At the end of the day, sometimes it's the organization themselves at fault. See, the problem is we don't do enough to tell someone. If you're developing a product, say you give birth to an idea. You have an infant in the business. Wow, here's my son. I work on the business concept for 4 years. Now I got myself a toddler. But I'm going to go to another company. I think I can take my son with me. But you can't. It ain't your kid. It's company's kid. We have to make sure people can't get that attached, that they know that they don't have any ownership interest in their idea. You have to make sure that IT is involved. And through 800 different cases of insider threats, they've basically shown that a routine audit of anyone with access to IP, intellectual property, 30 days out from when they leave voluntarily or involuntarily, will often show the insider. See, people have to feel their butts going out the door. They don't just steal it and go back working and playing for another year. They do it when they think they're leaving voluntarily or involuntarily. And the sixth chair, that's us. But you have to decide if you're going to pull up the chair. It's up to you. But I'll tell you, if you do, you better do it soon. Because there's lots of things we can do investigatively if there's probable cause. We can do surveillance, we can do wiretapping, we can do searches. But only if you tell us early and there's enough legal justification. Then you have to have a program. And this involves a holistic approach. 50% of technological things you put in. You place software and investment and in behavioral indicators. In behavioral things, there's a ton of them, and then we don't have time here. But they are loyalty indicators, foreign travel indicators, technological indicators where people do downloads, where they're making photocopies too much, where they have unexplained affluence, when they make foreign travels and they don't report it. Those kinds of things all add up. And going into technology, it's often these kind of things. Data loss prevention software tools. This is a software that basically, if you're working on the Project Aurora, it's checking for Project Aurora going out in an email. SIEM tools. That's Security Information Event Management software. This is what, amongst other things, it tracks what people download on their personally owned devices and stuff. And you have to have one that has content and real-time monitoring. System change controls. I know that's a weird thing, but basically it tells if your employee is put on a software on his or her laptop or computer they're not supposed to have. Like if it's Facebook or instant messaging stuff. You see, this may be done just because a person likes it, but it's also used by insiders to circumvent the programs that IT is monitoring. And at the high end, and I wouldn't expect anything but a large organization to invest in this, security analytics. And I don't espouse any of the programs specifically I name here. They're just told to me by business owners, such as Securonix, Red Owl, DuraCall, and others. These basically give everybody in the organization a value. And what you do raises you up to the red line as an insider or not. I go on travel to Russia. I go up. I download a million files. I go way up. That's the kind of thing. Now let's talk about outsiders. These are people who don't belong here. These are usually people from abroad, often hacking. These can be criminal hackers, and these can be foreign government-based hackers.
The nation's power grid, water utilities, air traffic control systems, and financial services companies, all vulnerable to cyber attacks from China, Russia, and hackers acting on behalf of Russia and other countries. A dramatic attack capable of shutting down one or all of those systems, says NSA Chief Admiral Michael Rogers, not a question of if, but when.
The cyber challenges you're talking about are not theoretical. This is something real, and that has the potential to lead to some truly significant, almost catastrophic failures if we don't take action.
The preparation, says Admiral Rogers, have already begun. Foreign nations as well as non-state actors working on their behalf carrying out recon missions on systems to seek out and test vulnerabilities. A successful attack could come at any time, taking down the nation's power grid, for instance, piece by piece.
Do the lights go out? Do we stop pumping water? Does that mean they already have the capability to flip the switch if they wanted to?
There shouldn't be any doubt in our minds that there are nation states and groups out there that have the capability to do that.
Nation states, holding off until we anger them enough that they have a reason to pull out the big guns, turning off the power. See, this stuff is called SCADA. It's a weird acronym that everybody kind of should know. Supervisory Control and Data Acquisition Chips. These are the things that keep these lights on, keep the water flowing. They're also called Industrial Control Systems, ICS. These things, the largest maker of which is our very own Rockwell Automation. Getting water out of tap, it's probably coming from a Rockwell chip somewhere. These people are trying to figure out how to get in the code and turn off the water. You can only imagine if ISIS gets a hold of one of these experts. You think they're going to hold off? No. And there are other vulnerabilities we have to worry about. Many of you have recently seen something that was shown about OnStar or the Uconnect feature in a Jeep Grand Cherokee, where they showed on Wired Magazine that through the right, knowing the IP address of the car, you could actually get in and mess with the car, turn on the wipers, turn the engine off, turn the radio on, all through the UConnect message center, the IT service in the car. And it doesn't stop there with vehicles. We also have cyber threats to our hospitals, where various reports, private and government, have seen there's vulnerabilities in interconnected devices, such as insulin pumps, where one expert said, I've got this thing, if I get within a few hundred meters, I can detect the insulin pumps in the hospital, and I can tell them to dispense the entire 30 cc's or whatever right into that person with a type A diabetic will be fatal. So this is the kind of vulnerabilities that your IT professionals are faced with, and we have to invest in now. Many people will say that it's time for a Cyber Manhattan project. Well, maybe it was time for that. But at the end of the day, it's still the people in this room, it's industry, that is the forefront of this cyber war. We're here there to help. But it's you that often bear the brunt of these attacks. Of computer intrusion, which you can see these statistics from IBM would show the number of breaches, and this is just 2 years ago. Obviously, before my background check was breached from OMB. So even my background, the SF-86, is apparently breached. I received a little note saying, hey, by the way, somebody's got your stuff, and I'm subject to credit monitoring. So you can see even the government isn't keeping itself clean.
If you look up and down the street of Manhattan, Wall Street's just around the corner, all the major banks, the stockbroking houses, have they been hacked already?
They've all been hacked. 80% of all American companies have already been hacked. And yet, most American companies spend more on their coffee budget than they do on protecting their IT systems. Sure, they've all been hacked.
Don't get me wrong, coffee's important. And I'm kind of dragging, so it's the only thing keeping me going right now. The fact is, you have to think about what you can afford and what proactively. It always, always pays to invest ahead of time before the attack takes place. You have to ask yourself, is my IT fortress safe? And you have to understand that the IT fortress is different than the physical fortress. I went to college with people who were in civil and other engineering, and they tell me that the load-bearing bricks on the bottom of this fortress are more important because they're holding everything up. Yeah, I get that. The cyber fortress is very different. No brick is more important than another. These bricks are your employees, mortared together by a common purpose, making money, helping each other out with everything, building a product or service, and they all deserve the same amount of attention. In the IT fortress, there are no associates. Everybody is the CEO. In the IT fortress, there ain't no privates in this army. They're all generals. And they all should get the general's briefing about what to worry about. You have to make sure they're all fortified against these threats. Because if I send an attack, am I going to target the IT professionals who know this? No. It's going to be the people dealing in marketing who accept all these emails all day long. And some of these emails come from very advanced threats. These are called by a different acronym than SCADA. APT. Has anyone ever heard of APT? It's not ISTE. Which has, by the way, just been bought by a Wisconsin firm, Spectrum Brands. APT, Advanced Persistent Threat. These are the best of the worst. These are, and often, government-supported hackers working to steal our secrets and access our networks. A company called FireEye, one of the most preeminent IT security firms in the world, they're tracking 30 APT groups. On the criminal side, they have 4. They call them FIN 1, 2, 3, and 4. But they have 30 APT groups they're watching. And it's growing every year. These are government-sponsored hackers, according to private industry.
Advanced persistent threat is this term that came out of military.
You can trust this guy because he has long hair.
Extremely sophisticated attackers who launch targeted attacks against organizations in order to break into their computer networks and steal information. Certainly any organization that deals with sensitive information needs to be concerned about this level of threat. When we're talking about advanced persistent threat, Usually the attacks start with reconnaissance. Bad guys will try to figure out as much information as they can about their target using public information sources. And then they'll start spear phishing. They'll send incredible emails to key decision makers and people who have access to information that they want to steal. And those emails will often be very convincing and credible, and they'll entice the user to click on a link or open a file, and the consequence is that the bad guys end up taking control of a computer. From there, they spread their control within the network.
I agree with everything you said, but he says they target key decision makers. Everybody who has a laptop or a keyboard in your office is a key decision maker. And these APT groups have many, many names, coined by groups like CrowdStrike, which causes them panda in different ways, they think they're Chinese, or Energetic Bear. Energetic Bear, which is a group that's believed, also called Crouching Yeti, believed to be the Russian government. They're not bothering with SCADA, our trade secrets. They're going straight at industrial control systems. APT-18, also called Dynamite Panda, they supposedly got community health systems. APT-17, they got Google. Got your Gmails. Unit 61486, believed to be in this building in Shanghai, going after aerospace secrets. And then these guys.
Wanted by the FBI, 5 Chinese military officials who've allegedly spent years stealing trade secrets from some of the biggest companies in the U.S., like Westinghouse and Alcoa, draining the U.S. economy of billions of dollars and putting Americans out of jobs, according to U.S. officials.
For the first time, we are exposing the faces and names behind the keyboards in Shanghai used to steal from American businesses.
From thousands of miles away, the U.S. tracked the men down to one city, one block, one building on a Chinese army base near Shanghai. According to this indictment, the 5 men hacked into the computer networks of 6 U.S. companies and the steel, nuclear power, and manufacturing industries.
One of those ATI.
Highly sensitive, cutting-edge research, pricing, and strategy information.
I think the American public has to be concerned. The American public, U.S. companies have lost billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars by many estimates. They've lost jobs. The U.S. has become less competitive. And Chinese companies and other nations' companies, as a matter of fact, have gained on the backs of American consumers, American taxpayers, American investors.
What are they stealing?
That's a great question, and it actually sort of depends on industry. But at the end of the day, it's hard to eliminate anything. It's Word documents, PowerPoint documents, email, PDF documents, Excel spreadsheet.
You got those? Your computers? That's the food they eat. That's what they're digesting every day. That's right. And these are the people who we recently indicted 5 of these guys. I couldn't fit them all and make it look good on the page here, but there's 5 guys, plus the other guy's name is Wang Dong. It didn't sound right. So these guys, we have been charged criminally with hacking, and we actually watched what they did. Who they were attacking, amongst other companies besides U.S. Steel, was the one I call ATI. My first one was delivering the then Milwaukee Journal, not Journal Sentinel as it's called now. And my next job was working for Century Foods as a bagger and a produce clerk. Down the street of where I worked in Cudahy, Wisconsin, was Lattice Corporation. Manufacturer. They're not called that anymore. They're called ATI Lattice. These guys hacked into the ATI infrastructure. Does that mean that potentially Cudahy, Wisconsin is in the brunt of this? Yeah, potentially it is. So we can't exonerate ourselves from this. We're not all the way away from this. Wisconsin is often ground zero. And these guys from Unit 61398, believed from the 3rd Department, 2nd Bureau, the People's Liberation Army, these are military hackers going after businesses in the United States. And we have criminally charged them for what they did.
Phishing is one of the several methods that
attackers this is what they use
to steal data from the general public. The attacker creates some basic bait, like a generic email with a malicious attachment, that installs some spyware and sends it to thousands of unsuspecting users, hoping at least some small percentage of bytes. Spear phishing is when the attacker focuses on a specific target, perhaps a highly privileged individual within an organization. This means that they must craft a convincing message that is tailored to the intended victim. The attacker carefully plans the strike, gathering data about the target, their social networks, and their online accounts, before meticulously tailoring the bait to the individual. Once the target falls for the bait, his credentials are captured. The attacker secretly enters the network and installs a persistence mechanism, such as a remote access Trojan, or RAT, to secure ongoing access to the system.
That is the number one threat from CyberWatts. I just listened to one of the gentlemen you heard earlier, just yesterday, Kevin Mandian, one of the most preeminent cyber experts in the world. He says that 90% of 200-something incidents that his company responded to, 90%, the vector of attack was a spearfish. That's this. It's you being sent an email targeting you and your organization. A fish is one that just says customer, pretending to be Chase Bank or somebody else, getting you to try to click. And if your financial institution sends you something, they won't have an actual link. They'll say log into your account. But these usually attachments or links trying to get you to click. It works by the same thing that the traditional vampire movies work on. That's where someone gets bit, they come back the next day or that night, and they're scratching on the window, trying to entice you to open it up. And the movie wouldn't move along if someone didn't open it up. They are trying to entice you to click, convince you. They're trying to act as though they're sending an email from your internal organization, pretending to be the CEO, spoofing, trying to pretend to be someone you know, because they've looked at your social networks. They have looked at your LinkedIn page. They have looked at your Facebook. You're cascading reams of personal information that you probably shouldn't be, including what you just ate that day. I don't get that, but people do this. And often the medium of attack is a compression file, such as a zip or RAR file. And they're pretty evenly spaced. Malware sending through a link or a attachment. And this is exactly what those group that we indicted used. This guy, for instance, Sun. We actually alleged this guy sent spear phishing emails with links to malware, bad stuff, to 20 U.S. Steel employees posing as the CEO. He then spoofed emails to 8 other employees with a title that was believable because it was targeting specifically U.S. Steel people. It said U.S. Steel Industry Outlook. This guy knew English, and he flavored it for the victims. And alleged to send spear phishing email, this guy, to 19 senior Alcoa employees using a fake account. See, we're not reading where it's coming from. The URL at the top, it's slightly off, but because we don't read, we are moving at the speed of light, we don't take the time. And not taking the time is what's biting us. And he disguised his zip file. Once again, the zip file is used in this attack. Another medium of attack, the number one thing is spear phishing. And one thing, don't rely on your antivirus. You see, some of these things are custom made. The one thing you have to worry about is if you get on something that is called a rootkit type of attack. This is going to the core of your computer system. A remote access Trojan, a RAT, if it gets on your system, the moment that it's uploaded, you have allowed somebody thousands of miles away to watch what you're doing on your screen right now as a silent partner to you looking at your kids' photos. That's what you've allowed to do. You've allowed the vampire in. So be careful, because some of this stuff is custom-made. These custom-made attacks are called zero-day attacks, because they've never been seen before. They are actually sold and traded in the dark web amongst people. And these bad people get them, and when they fire off, there is no cure for this virus. It's like the Walking Dead virus first day. Everybody's getting it. And you get patches and stuff day one, day two, but on day zero, everybody's in the world of hurt. The other domain of attack is the watering hole attack. That's where a cyber actor gets on and poisons a website. You see, most of the web, like Amazon.com and stuff, is in the ray of light part of the web. The moment you start down getting to the dark web and stuff like that, when you're going farther out of the ray of light, porn sites and other stuff, no one is policing these websites. They are laced, JPEGs and other images are laced with malware. At least in the real life, you have to worry, but if bad guys want to get in there and poison the known accounts looking for victims. And that's what they do. And that's why it's always important to make sure you have the right monitoring tools, up-to-date patches, and so on. Two of which I can say absolutely, always patch. If you have Adobe Flash, Adobe, and Java are the two main programs for avenues of attacks. You ever see that thing at the bottom of your thing? You don't click on that? You better. That's the thing you should always keep uploaded. The head of security at SC Johnson says that's his number one thing. And this an example of this was people bombarded oil company with spear phishes. Nobody was clicking on nothing. So what did they do? They poisoned the Chinese takeout place nearby. So next time the CEO ordered Mushu chicken or Kung Pao or something, boom. That's how they introduced the attack, by clicking on the link in the compromised account of the Chinese takeout place. And then you have to worry about brute force attacks. Your password security is important, and length, in this case, does matter. We're talking about your song, something from the Torah, whatever. Length does matter. Not being semicolon, dash, whatever. Being that way doesn't work. The length does matter. And you have to understand, when you're reusing your super accounts, and I bet everyone in this room is doing this, and you have your Packers win 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, first kid's name, and you're using Chase and your Gmail account, whatever, these brute force attacks are like out of a lot of these movies where they're trying to crack the safe and they got this machine set up and they're getting the launch codes and they go, like, give me 15 more minutes, we'll break in. Well, these work that way. They try billions of combinations. And once they get one, they immediately pull out and they start using it again at other accounts, trying to get into your other accounts. And you've just made it easy for them if you're using it. So change it up. If you're doing Packers Win 1, 2, 3, 5, how about Google Packers Win? Chase Packers Win. Yahoo Packers Win. At least that you're doing it. Close as long as it's Packers Win, right? So another thing, there's another vulnerability we want to talk about called buffer overflow vulnerability. But another one that you should know about is called SQL injection. It's a longer term for the language it is, but just think of it as SQL. What this is when someone is ordering a product or service online, and you've got those little red asterisks, your name, your date of birth, or whatever, and you put this thing to ship your stuff back, that information's got to get to the shipping place. It's got to get to the business. This goes often through a language, to be simplistic, called SQL. If your IT professionals have not updated the language of your computer system or have not performed good functions in setting it up, there will be vulnerabilities. And a SQL injection attack will enable someone to, instead of typing in your name, they can, that same line, they can type in this special SQL language, which is the equivalent of let me into your computer. Click, and I'm in. That's what SQL injection is. You don't click on nothing. They just go into your website. And I'm using special search engines, like you might never heard of, like Multigo and ShowdownHQ.
You've used Google or some other search engine to find something online at some point, but did you know hackers, both good and bad, also have a search engine called Shodan? It allows them to find devices and other things connected to the internet. Originally built as one person's project to see connected devices, Shodan has since become a major tool in the hacking and security community to find vulnerable devices.
It crawls the internet looking for devices and categorizes and classifies them and allows you to search for them. You can see I've issued a query that says PTZ executive. You're going to find a list of a particular model of red light camera. We're going to take one of them, and we're going to see what we can find out about it.
This one's
what
Jordan
does is provides us an IP address, some location information, and other attributes about the device. This is a license plate recognition technology feature. It's also important to identify this part right here, which is basic VDS with no security. This is really one of the things that people are worried about. People are deploying and plugging in things into the internet, oftentimes with little to no security.
And this is a pay-per-use service. Services like this can be good and bad for white or black hat hackers. And in this one, you can go on there and it says no security. So you might look on there, 1.6 billion IP addresses. They can be in your house, they can be the Pepsi machine, which has to beam out signals saying I'm empty. It can be in a power plant. It can be Unfortunately, it can be even the connected devices to your daycare, the monitoring camera. And a little while ago, a group of Russian hackers were broadcasting something like 7,000 different cameras, including in daycare centers and baby cams, that people had not changed the default password on. These default passwords on every device are well known. You don't change that? And one father went up to his kid's room, and the little talk box that you could talk to your kid was hacked into, and a guy was talking, he was watching his child. So these things happen, and it's a very real threat. Now, putting it all together, brute force attacks, spear phishing, all this stuff, SQL injection, this is showing you all together how an intrusion would take place.
Zero-day exploit with some social engineering to get the victim to open their malicious file. This computer is now under their control, and they can use this user account to begin exploring the network undetected. The hackers look for any information they can use to exploit the system and gain higher privileges to access further data. Here they find a login page to an HR database and attempt an SQL injection attack. It fails. They find an email from another user that seems to have access to important databases and target him. After dumping the local password cache, the attackers have domain admin credentials. They browse the network to find the machine belonging to the new target. They connect with the remote desktop to drop a backdoor for later use and access the local hard drive, searching them for sensitive data. Now it's time for the payoff. Exfiltration. They return to the compromised machine and find their goal. Credentials for a development database. A brute force attack against the server gets them root access and they're free to dump the entire source code for a critical project. All they have to do now is bring it home.
Just like that.
And too often people are just saying, just like that. When that green bar goes to the end, someone's jobs just got taken away. That's what happens. Exfiltration, that's often the worst possible thing. You have lost control of your data and the future integrity of your company or your idea. What do you do about this? Well, you can do what the Russians did, and their version of the, bless you, Secret Service actually resorted to ordering 20 old-style ribbon metal typewriters, like the one I typed my first thank you Christmas letter to my grandma. It took me like 2 weeks with whiteout. They ordered these. Can we afford to do this? These were $750 a piece, by the way. Can we afford to do this in an interconnected world where having the Samsung 1000 and the iPhone 10 million is absolutely imperative to us? That's why we have to be smart. You have to have an intrusion response plan. What are you going to do if someone's in there? Don't start thinking about it. It's just like a fire drill. You don't start thinking when the fire happens. You got to know and practice. Train employees regarding these spear phishes. Remember, this is up to 90% of your vulnerability. And consider if you have the opportunity to do red teaming. That means having a service or someone internal in your company actually sending out fake spear phishes and determine how many people are falling for this. Over time, you will get them slightly insulated. You will never get it down to zero. You can actually fabricate an attack that says, this is a malware attack, do not click this, and one of your employees will. It's gonna happen. But if you even get one person out of five to report this, you can declare victory because you are lowering and mitigating the risk to your business. Employee defense in depth, whole layers of different things if you can afford it. Some healthcare organizations have things from high-end products like Palo Alto mixed in with FireEye, mixed in with all kinds of other stuff that are free off the internet in layers. Consider adopting the National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST Cybersecurity Framework, NIST Guidelines. The NIST Guidelines Cybersecurity Framework is codified in almost every major corporation's defense plans. Install DLP, data loss prevention software. Enable or use HTTPS encryption. Believe it or not, some financial institutions are not encrypting their websites. And utilize multi-factor or two-factor authentication. You don't want to just have a password. If someone steals a password, you don't want to enable that. You want to make sure that there is a code in addition that gets generated every time, or an RSA token or something else, or biometrics you're using, so that someone just doesn't steal a password to get in. Allegedly, this is how JP Morgan Chase got breached. They two-factored everything except one spot, and that's where the attack came from. Disable or limit admin access. If you have a small corporation of four, probably everybody who's been set up has this. This is called, and I don't mean to be profane, the God account. This is where you can reconfigure or do anything to the computer network you want. In large organizations, there's only like five people like who have this power. I'm just paraphrasing, but it's very few. Held to a higher standard. That means that everyone with one of these God accounts in your company, if they get hacked, they got the whole company. In large organizations, it's only a few. Usually hackers get in and they get at the ground floor at a user account, and they can do limited things. They want to escalate themselves up to being the more powerful account. Utilize things like the SANS 20 critical security controls or the OWASP top 10 list. Utilize pen testers. These are white hat hackers who for a fee will actually try to breach your organization and see if they can get in. And believe me, they have proven themselves. A major organization here in Wisconsin actually brought in a pen tester to get in. And one of the openings they found, the day they did their attack, because they weren't based in Wisconsin, they hacked in, they got into the video teleconferencing feature in the executive boardroom. They turned on the camera, and it swiveled around and looked right at the CEO as he was talking. They got into the boardroom. Consider disabling Java, JavaScript, ActiveX, and other scripting functions in email. These things make your internet life easier, but they're also helping hackers. And if you're not disabling, make sure that Java and Adobe are patched. Encrypt your data on entry. This has been a problem with a lot of stores. Implement those strict password guidelines. And ensure that your third-party suppliers and contractors with access have the same level of security protocols as you. You don't want to be here and have your cloud provider here. The equivalent would be, I'm safe in my house at night, and I'm putting my kids in an undefended shack. You don't want to do that with your most prized possession, which would be your children or your data. This is what happened to Target and Home Depot. You see, they got attacked through a third party. These guys apparently got attacked through Fazio Mechanical, their HVAC provider, who they allowed access to their systems so they could get the HVAC going. They were using an unpaid malware service called Malwarebytes. You get what you pay for, apparently. And they got through them, jumped over to the real Target, which was Target, and got in. Institute credential management, and I can go in more detail about that. And institute network segmentation. That means your trade secrets I talked about are in this area here, protected. And all the other blasé stuff is here. And utilize firewalls and intrusion detection systems. Baseline your network. There's different types. One is signature-based intrusion detection. That's something where your antivirus is looking at pictures of known felons. And every day it gets updated, like when your Norton goes on, it's updated. But the thing is, it can only look for known felons. So if I have no criminal record and I'm standing looking right at your house, going, yeah, you can't do nothing about it. See, this is what a zero day is. No criminal history. That's why the more sophisticated types of malware examiners are called statistical anomaly. The anomaly. They're looking for something acting funny. And they stop and frisk it in your neighborhood and go, oh, oh, oh. Instead of a gun, it's malware. Oh, we got a pat down. Oh, there's malware here. But you get what you pay for. And just consider within your means about these different things. I don't advocate any of these things, but these are what professionals tell me they use. Mitigate the threat of ransomware by this is the thing. You have to have a secure backup. Make sure that when it says enable backup, you do that. And you can use some services like CryptoMonitor, but I don't know if they're effective or not. Because you will pay. If they get in, it's NSA-level encryption. You will have to pay if they get in. So do this and mitigate the threat of what's distributed denial of service attacks. That's where they're flooding your business for a political or criminal aim, and then they say, hey, you have to pay us with Bitcoin or something, or else we're going to keep attacking and bringing down your website. They're stopping your legitimate traffic. This involves you doing a lot of things ahead of time. Or you're going to be paid for the nose by getting AT&T DDoS or other things like that. Good services, but they cost. So go ahead and do things ahead of time to head off the threat of DDoS attacks. Number one threat to your mobile device, your smartphone. By the way, it's not a phone. It hasn't been for a long time. You know, in the 80s, people had the big boom boxes. You're now, when you're talking the equivalent of that tower under your desk computer. It is a computer that's used a little bit to make calls. And malicious apps are the number one thing. So make sure you're going from like the Apple Store or someplace that's a trusted, vetted area. And worry about IMSI catchers. It's called a man-in-the-middle or woman-in-the-middle attack. You go to Starbucks, you probably have enabled the auto-connect feature for your Wi-Fi, which has a range of about 250 meters. It is selecting the Wi-Fi thing. If you're at your house, you can choose the different networks in your neighborhood, hopefully your own. And if you go to a Starbucks or some other place in a hotel, it might do it for you. You have to worry that someone has set up an IMSI catcher that looks like a laptop, and they are masquerading ahead of Starbucks, and you've hooked into it, and they're watching everything you do, and nothing is private anymore. And worry about sniffing programs. And the last thing I want to tell you, real quick, is this. Consider disabling the geotagging features in your phone. Every photograph you take has metadata embedded in it. And it's the equivalent of, like I said, Byron Franz, a picture from black and white, Byron Franz at the zoo in 1972. That's what's on all your photos. And when you tag them and post them online, someone knows exactly where and when that was taken. There's things that you can do. If you're doing a Twitter account with the GPS hooked up or something, someone's stalking you or trying to find you, they're following your movements. Every posting you do, I know exactly where you are, when you were. And some guys who were in Iraq, they landed, took photos next to their gunships, and they posted it. The insurgents weren't stupid. They took that, put it in their artillery tubes, and shot down right at them. Destroyed four Apache gunships on the ground because the guys posted his locations. ISIS guy posting his locations. I imagine that 10 minutes later, the location didn't exist anymore. So grandparents, they go over, they give their daughter some, she's at work, they do some favor for her, they go over and pick up the granddaughter from daycare, they're loving grandparents, they take her to the playland at McDonald's, they take photos there, then they take her home, change her, and then they go to the park over here, and they post it all online. And I'm a child predator, and I spend all day collecting stuff on your kids. What can I do for that? I know what tree to hide behind in the park that your kid always plays at. Don't give this to these people. Don't give this information away. Think about it. And when it comes to geotagging, consider you can just go online with Google or something and look up Android or iPhones, how to disable geotag. You can keep on your little GPS stuff to know where you are all the time, but worry about this. Make sure this isn't on there if you don't want it there. So thank you again. Think about calling us. Why? Because we all look like this. We have been paid for. We are public servants. We are there to protect you. You are wealth gatherers. We are wealth protectors. But we have to do it together as a partnership. We have the authority, but we need the call from you. I'm Byron Franz. I'm the strategic partnership coordinator for the FBI's Milwaukee office. The Milwaukee office is there for you. Our Green Bay office is there for you. Thank you for your time. Have a great day.